It's the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. when Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong come along with the morning show. 312-981-7200. Our buddy Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com abandoned us last week when we were all a titter about where the Chinese space station was going to land. I was worried that you were on a flight already up here to get your tacos, that you knew where it was coming. And Chris, it turns out the thing lands in the South Pacific. How in the world does it end up down there?
By sheer coincidence. So as you guys might remember, we were talking a lot about the uncertainty
right.
of exactly where it would come down. And in the hours leading up to its reentry, we had some good indications that it would come in primarily over the Pacific, Indian, or Southern Atlantic Oceans. And the only land masses that we were worried about were primarily in South America and Africa. And just by sheer coincidence, when the upper levels of Earth's atmosphere finally slowed the station down enough to drag it in and start burning up, it came in over the Pacific Ocean. And ironically, only a few hundred miles away from what's known as the spacecraft graveyard, which is an area of the Pacific where we specifically target these large satellites to come in over, because it's away from shipping lanes, it's a remote part of the world, and an ideal part where we don't have to worry about it hitting anyone or endangering anyone. And that's ironically quite close to where it actually came in.
Now, was that purely coincidence? China was kind of not real forthcoming about information on this. Everybody said it was out of control. I don't think China ever completely said or admitted it was out of control. Is there a chance that they did have a little bit of control still over it and were able to direct it there?
Doubtful. China did issue a final advisory, just like we were talking about the European Space Agency was doing for reentry windows. They didn't issue one until very, very late in the game, which basically said it could come in anywhere from over China itself to Africa on a single orbit. And that is the orbit it came in on. Now, what that probably means is that China was still getting some good orbital data downlinked from the satellite, that even though from the station, that even though they couldn't control where it would come in, they were still receiving telemetry of how high it was, its specific rate of descent, whereas the rest of us were relying on our ground-based telescopes looking up at it to figure all of that out. So it probably just means that China had a better idea of where it was, but it definitely was not controllable. We didn't witness anything in the data of it coming down that would indicate that it fired thrusters or anything like that. So purely coincidental.
Other than the data that was had from it being tracked from satellites and stuff, did anybody actually witness it reenter? Did people see a fireball across the sky? Is there any video of it reentering at all?
So not from the ground, but to give everyone a sense of how powerful our weather satellites are up there, a weather satellite actually caught its reentry. So from geostationary orbit, 22,000 some odd miles away, one of our weather satellites actually caught a little streak going across the atmosphere right where our data said it entered. So we have a picture of it. We don't have video, and it actually came in quite far away from shipping lanes and habitable land. So no one has come forward with any video that is credible. There are a lot of hoaxes out there of people claiming to have gotten it. Right. But when you play those videos side by side with known reentries of some resupply crafts to the International Space Station, they're coincidentally identical. So lots of hoaxes, but no ground-based video,
no,
unfortunately.
Actually. Was this as disappointing for you as it was for me, or did you not care as long as it came in and nobody got hurt?
Well, I admit, after the last time we talked, I was looking forward to my taco. I think for me, it was definitely exciting to watch from the perspective of how much we were learning. You know, we had talked earlier about how other large satellites like this, like and space stations, like the Mir space station, were very controlled entries. We knew exactly where they were going to come in. And the last really major uncontrolled reentry of a big object was Skylab in the early 1980s. So it was interesting to for me and exciting to see as we were putting out the predictions, as we were trying to figure out exactly how much this thin layer of atmosphere was going to drag it down and how good our predictions were. It was pretty exciting to see that in the end, the predictions were pretty much spot on. The final predictions that were issued by the three major agencies that had been, one of them being the European Space Agency, Tiangong 1 either came in at the very beginning of those predictions or smack dab in the middle of those predictions. So going forward, if we have another event like this, it was exciting to see that our predictions were really accurate, and that gives us a good foothold for if we ever have to combat this again, to say, hey, our models are accurate. We know more or less where this is going to come in. So if we start to tell you a day before, hey, you know, the United States, North America isn't in the reentry track, that we know that's good and accurate information.
What is the next piece of big equipment that'll come down someday? I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of things floating around our skies right now, satellites and other things like that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like down the road where you'd say, yeah, this is going to come in a couple of years and that's going to be a big event?
Well, unless something major happens and we just lose complete control of something big up there, not really. The one thing that I would say that has the largest potential, if everything goes the same way it did with the first Chinese space station, is and I know you're going to laugh at this, is a second Chinese space station called Tiangong 2, which is currently up there.
Is it the exact same space station, or is it a different model?
It's a slightly different model, a slightly bigger model, and it's part of China's phased approach to increasing the size of an orbital space station. They eventually want to build a station that's smaller than the International Space Station, but composed of different modules, just like the International Space Station is. The first module of that is set to launch later this year or early next year. But in the meantime, to bridge that gap between Tiangong 1, which just came in, and I think what they're sort of referring to as Tiangong 3, they've got this second one up there right now. It's been up for a few years, and they do plan to send some crewed missions up to it. Barring anything major with the other big objects that we have up there, Tiangong 2 would be one that I would look out for to see if China tries to deorbit it successfully and safely, or if they just sort of leave it up there to come in whenever it may. Because it's worth noting that NASA has plans. The big one that NASA has up that we're going to be looking for are the International Space Station and the Hubble Space Telescope. Hubble is predicted to be up there until the 2030s, based on the same atmospheric drag that just brought Tiangong 1 in. Mm-hmm. And the International Space Station is currently funded through the middle of the next decade, and then after that, funding is a little uncertain as to whether or not the U.S. government will continue funding of that, or if we'll turn it over to private corporations after the U.S. government stops funding it. But in both of those cases, there are very, very well-thought-out plans for how to bring those vehicles down over the Southern Pacific graveyard and making sure there's enough fuel on board and left on board to do that. So we would, you know, deorbit the station using Russian or American vehicles that we would launch up there to bring the station down. And for Hubble, it's more a option of using its gyroscopes and its stabilizing equipment to bring it down into this same area so that if any parts of it were to survive reentry, it would fall harmlessly into the ocean.
Hubble is relatively small, though, isn't it?
Yes, Hubble is small. Hubble was launched by the space shuttles in 1990. And just for comparison, so, you know, the Tiangong space station was roughly 18,000 pounds.
Like a school bus size, right?
Yeah, basically a school bus size. And Hubble is just a little larger than that. Hubble is about 24,500 pounds.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't have thought it was bigger than a space station.
Yeah, but the main difference here is Hubble doesn't have engines. So a lot of the really bulky equipment that we were worried about potentially surviving reentry on the Chinese space station, we're not worried about in terms of Hubble. Hubble is composed of a lot of more lighter material, but still some stuff that we'd be concerned might make it in, like some of the primary mirrors and cameras that are on board. So that's why we would also deorbit it over that Pacific graveyard
The ISS, the International Space Station, which probably has a lot of years left, if that ever comes down, that will be one hell of a fireball across the sky, right?
Yes, because it is significantly bigger than Mir. It's the largest vehicle that we have ever constructed in orbit.
It's like the third brightest light in our night sky when it streaks across now, right?
Depending on viewing it, it can be. It can be, I believe, the fourth. I don't believe it gets brighter than Venus does, as Venus is the third. But yeah, it's extremely bright and it's extremely noticeable. So when that vehicle does come in, maybe as early as late next decade, it will produce a very significant fireball, and you can expect a lot of NASA, European, Canadian, and Japanese and Russian aircraft to be down over the South Pacific recording its reentry and breakup.
And will they try to recover any of it, or will they just let it float to the bottom of the ocean?
No, it'll any parts of it that survive will sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Interesting. Fascinating. What is ahead? I mean, let's just talk for a minute, because you and I haven't had a chance to talk about, because it's funny, Chris, you know, I've been going to your website the last couple of weeks, and you guys weren't updating Chuandong. You guys are concentrating on real space stuff about what's happening in the future and what's going on. I'm like, where is the space station going to burn up? You guys aren't even tracking that, because you're doing actual stuff, real stuff that NASA's working on. I only have a minute left, but what's the most exciting thing that you're following as far as NASA and all the private work that's going on now when it comes to space?
Oh, in terms of the private work, so this would be the Commercial Crew Program and NASA's contracts with Boeing and SpaceX to begin crew rotation flights to the International Space Station. And as a good consequence of that, also fostering the commercial space market in general and making vehicles from SpaceX and Boeing that can also carry regular, ordinary people up to space if you've got enough money to pay for that. Spaceflight, especially human spaceflight, has been a government-run entity since its creation. And this year, with Boeing and SpaceX, we'll definitely see uncrewed test flights of both Starliner and Dragon. And hopefully by the end of the year, but more than likely early next year, we will see the first crew test flights of both of those vehicles as well. And that's a long undertaking that has been many, many years in the making that's finally going to come to fruition here. That to me is the most exciting thing in the public-private partnership right now.
And Chris, where do you see that heading? Assuming there's no fatalities, which I think would probably destroy that for a while, that would set it back 20 or 30 years, the, you know, general tourism in space. If they are able to do it safely and start launching people into space, I imagine somehow that starts at the ISS. Where does that head?
Yeah.
Mars is such a big endeavor. Do you see possibly a private setup on the moon so that people start going back and forth to the moon? Or do you just see people circling the sky for a couple of days, taking some shots of the planet and then coming back?
So I actually think all of those scenarios are likely to play out. There's a I think private enterprise on the moon and getting astronauts, right, whether they be NASA astronauts or regular people doing missions, scientific missions to the moon, is a huge possibility. There's a plan right now from Bigelow Aerospace to actually create a what's called a cislunar economy, or a around the moon economy, where they have these inflatable space station modules that they want to launch and form commercial space stations around the moon to provide either research platforms for scientists or hotels, or there's even some talk about mining companies being interested in setting up a shop on the moon if we want to talk about permanent colonies. So I think this is going to run the gamut between just the go up there for a couple of days, take some photos and come down, and companies that are really looking at, if we're serious about this, we need to develop some kind of economy and some kind of business model for it. And there are companies who are taking that very, very seriously, like Bigelow and United Launch Alliance. So what I love right now is that everyone seems to be focusing on a different element of it, which to me is great. Not everyone is focused on Mars. You know, SpaceX and NASA are really the only two agencies that are focused on human exploration of the red planet. But then you've got all these other agencies saying, well, we don't care about Mars. We care about the moon, or we care about low Earth orbit, or we care about the continuation of the International Space Station after the U.S. government might stop funding it middle of next year. So that's really good to see a companies focusing on the various elements that all need to come together here to make all of the endeavors work.
Chris Gebhardt is with NASASpaceflight.com. You can read tons of interesting stories about all the exploration going on in space and the private and public partnerships. We'll check in again soon, Chris. Thank you so much for helping us out with all this unfulfilling to me space station hullabaloo. We'll do tacos when Hubble comes down, or ISS, I promise.
Sounds good, Matt. Thanks.
All right, Chris. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon. Chris Gebhardt, again, NASASpaceflight.com.